radio, and the internet.
TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Welcome to Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G on TalkZone.com. And now, here's a Cubs fan who drinks light beer and has mustard relish and grilled onions on his Chicago dog, and a White Sox fan who prefers single malts and Cuban cigars. But there's no mistaking their everlasting love for the Fighting Illini of the University of Illinois. You are Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G.
Boz and Mr. G back, Talking Illini, last show of the year, last hour of the year, and we're going to segue away from basketball and football for a few minutes and welcome in. My guess is her office might be at Huff Hall, Huff Gym. I'm not sure. We'll find out, but let's give a warm Talking Illini welcome to our friend Gene Driscoll. Hi, Gene. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you doing?
Good, good. Glad we caught up to you before the end of the season. I want to tell the listeners, I didn't get into a little of the bio stuff, but you're in the Wheelchair Sports USA Hall of Fame. And for some of your unbelievable accomplishments, such as 8-time champion of the Boston Marathon, only one other person has achieved that feat thus far, and also you remain the first and only person to ever break the course and world record at the Boston Marathon 5 times.
Gene, I think we were in school together. This is Mr. G here. What years did you attend U of I?
87 and 93.
Oh, no, you're much younger than I am.
I was an undergrad and a master's.
Yeah, undergrad and a master's.
Yeah.
But one of the things that struck me going to school there in the late 70s is how far ahead of the curve Illinois has always been in terms of accessibility.
Well, that's because a man named Tim Nugent came back from World War II and saw that the guys with who had acquired injuries in the war couldn't use their GI bills, and he didn't think it was right. And so he went toe-to-toe with university administrators and said, these men put their lives on the line. They deserve a college education. And that's the short story, but it has to do with the veterans.
So when what year did it actually start? Did the university actually embrace accessibility as an agenda item?
1948 is the first year that students with disabilities attended the University of Illinois. There were no other campuses that were accessible, and Tim Nugent built the first ramps in his garage and moved them from building to building as the veterans were changing classes.
That's incredible. It really is. It actually, it's one of the things that I'm most proud of relative to the university. I tell people that when we went to school there, you know what? It didn't matter. There was accessibility in every building. There were sports, disabled sports as well. I don't know if that's the correct term or not.
Well, they call it adapted sports.
Adapted sports, thank you.
In my mind, it's just sports.
It's just sports.
Right, right. Gene, you were born in Milwaukee with spina bifida, and in your bio says that you didn't start using a wheelchair until age 15. Tell us a little bit about your childhood and the trials and tribulations you had before age 15.
Well, I was born with an open spine, spina bifida, and was able to walk with below-the-knee braces until I was a freshman in high school. And I was coming home from a babysitting job. I took a corner too sharply. The pedal dug into the cement. I fell on my hip, and it dislocated. And the reason it dislocated so quickly and easily was because of the weak lower body musculature due to the spina bifida. So I spent a year in a body cast. I had 5 major hip operations, and after I got that last body cast off, just trying to sit up in bed, getting flexible in my hips and knees again, my hip dislocated. So none of the surgeries worked, and my doctor said I had to start walking with crutches and using a wheelchair. And at first I was devastated because I had a lot of the same ideas about a wheelchair that many people do. I thought it was limiting. I thought my life was over, and life would never be the same. And the irony is that wheelchair gives me more independence than I had when I was walking.
Now, actually, then in Milwaukee during your later high school years, I guess you had your first athletic experiences.
Well, I transferred high schools my junior year, And within the first couple weeks, I met another kid who also had spina bifida and used a wheelchair, and he invited me to come and try out wheelchair soccer. Well, as I said, I had all the same stereotypes about a wheelchair that a lot of people did, so I turned him down. I didn't want to go hang out with those wheelchair people. I thought they were weird, you know. I could still get up and walk, but he stayed on me the entire school year, and finally in May, at the end of my junior year, I said, okay, I'll go to get this guy off my back, and I went to the soccer practice, and it was nothing like I thought it was going to be. Chairs were crashing and banging, bodies were flying, and I was like, all right, this is sport. This is not what I thought. And then from there, I found out about wheelchair football and ice hockey and softball, and eventually was recruited to the University of Illinois to play wheelchair basketball.
Now, when you say recruited, is there financial aid part of that as well?
Back when I came, there was no financial aid. But the fact that somebody wanted me on their team, somebody was calling repeatedly, sending me letters saying, we want you on our team, it made such a difference. Because when I was up and walking around, my legs weren't very strong. I fell down a lot. I couldn't run very well. And so I was always the last kid picked on the playground at recess. I was always the last kid picked during physical education classes. But when I started walking on crutches, and maybe you guys have used crutches before, that was natural strength building.
Yeah.
And so my strength to weight ratio increased dramatically. And when I sat down in a chair, all of a sudden I was one of the fastest people out on that court. And so I was recruited to join the University of Illinois women's wheelchair basketball team so I could play. But I still had to pay out-of-state tuition.
You did. They, even after being there a year, they didn't relent on that at all?
Well, I applied to get in-state tuition. I applied for residency, actually, and it took me 2 years to get residency because they were afraid that I was just coming here to do sports, and then I was going to go back to Wisconsin.
When you were applying here to school and you looked at various other schools, was Illinois a place that stood out for you because of the emphasis on accessibility, because they've been at the cutting edge in terms of accessibility?
Well, quite honestly, I didn't know anything about the history here at the U of I. What did it for me is that Brad Hedrick, who is now the Director of Services for Students with Disabilities, at the time, Brad Hedrick was the head basketball coach. He wanted me on his team. And that's why I came, because I was very flattered that I might be able to fit in and do good things on a collegiate team. And there aren't very many university sports teams even today, but there's quite a few more now these days than back in the late 80s.
When I think about the intellectual capital, of people who are, currently in chairs, obviously there are some very bright, very gifted people. Is the university taking full advantage of playing up those strengths that we offer here to people who are really extraordinary students besides being, excellent wheelchair athletes?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's the same as athletes without disabilities. And, there are small monies for scholarships available now for the wheelchair athletes, although I don't think anybody has a full scholarship. But some of those kids come here because they get academic scholarships, and that allows them to be here at the University of Illinois, where they can not only pursue their academic goals, but then also they get to be part of a world-class sports team.
Now, when you were coming to U of I as a freshman, did you know anybody that was there or coming from Milwaukee, or you were like kind of totally on your own? Tell us about your initial experience that first semester.
Well, I didn't really know anybody. I had come down to Champaign for a wheelchair sports camp a couple months before I went to school here, and I actually had made a developmental track team where I competed in England a month before I moved here. And so when I got to campus, not only did I play basketball, but I also got involved in the track and road racing program. And the racing coach is the one that I started to get to know when I was in England on that developmental team. So I really mostly knew the coaches. I knew a couple of the athletes just because they, you know, I saw them at a track meet. But it was pretty much coming here starting over. It took me about 2 years to make the transition. But obviously I haven't left.
when you race in the Boston Marathon or you attend competitions like that, are you treated like athletic royalty when you go to these competitions?
Well, particularly at the Boston Marathon, because I had such incredible success out there. The first year I went to Boston in 1990, I was praying for third, and I ended up winning Boston, breaking the world record by almost 7 minutes. And looking at my coach, it took my coach 2 years to talk me into doing a marathon period. And I did the Chicago Marathon in the fall of 89 and was fast enough in that event that I qualified for Boston. And I didn't want to do Boston. I didn't like the marathon training. I didn't like the marathon distance. But my racing coach saw something in me I didn't see in myself. And so I went out to Boston. I won that first year. I won the second year. I won the third year, the fourth year. The first 7 years that I did Boston, I won it every year. And that first year, well, any of the years that I broke the world record and also set a new course record, I won $25,000 along with that. So I wasn't mad at my coach too long after that.
Speaking of training, Gene, tell us about, you know, when you were first getting started, you know, with the track team, so to speak. You know, what kind of, you know, what did the training entail for the Boston Marathon? And did you just, you know, especially in Champaign, are you in the armory or out on the streets? Or give us an idea what your training regimen was.
Well, I was a dual sport athlete. So I was doing basketball and I was doing track and road racing. And I'll tell you, all I did was train and go to school. It was a very focused lifestyle. In terms of basketball, we had practice 6 days a week, 2 hours a day. And we were lifting weights 3 to 4 times a week, at least 2 hours a day. And then in terms of mileage, we were training both on the road and on the track in our racing chairs. And our mileage was anywhere from 120 to 150 miles a week. And, you know, with the weight training, to help people understand, I had a body weight of 112 pounds. And I could bench press 200 pounds.
Wow.
Actually, I got 210 pounds up. And that was without the use of my legs to stabilize. That's just all upper body.
Wow. That is amazing.
And there's athletes, you know, guys that are putting up twice that.
Mike Davis can't do that.
I was going to say, maybe we need to fix you guys up there and show them a few things.
So how disappointing was it for you when Chicago didn't get the Olympics and Paralympics bid this past fall?
Well, I've got some friends who worked really hard on that bid, and I know the long hours that they put in. I appreciate the legacy programs that were established because of their bid work, but I more felt bad for the people involved in all the planning. It was such a shock when everybody was in Copenhagen and the U.S. was the first name announced as not getting the game.
It's all politics, baby. It's
oh,
all
absolutely.
Politics.
Yeah.
I mean, there were African countries who were told, well, we don't want to embarrass Spain. Vote for Spain on the first ballot, and then you can vote for Chicago after that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories out there about the politicking going on, and it's probably not anything I should repeat, but you are absolutely right.
What was the worst story you heard relating to politics and the bid process?
Well, the stories that I learned basically were part of you know, the politicking of who you should vote for and who you shouldn't. And these people were, you know, the IOC, the International Olympic Committee members, were flown around and they were treated as royalty, to use your phrase, in every city that they visited. And that's about what I'll say. But I know that there was a lot of lobbying for votes, and you know, that's what we do in any election. But it was very disappointing that we went out so quickly.
I also heard that there were a couple contracts that the Brazilian government entered into with other nations, and the quid pro quo for those contracts was their vote in the Olympic process.
Well, I don't know about that, but
wouldn't be shocking.
Like you said, that's politics.
Our guest is Gene Driscoll, talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Gene, you're with now the Department of Applied Life Studies in the development end, is that correct?
Well, I work in the College of Applied Health Sciences. It used to be Applied Life Studies, and the name was changed
okay.
a couple of years ago. It's Applied Health Sciences.
My degree says Applied Life Studies.
Yes, well, you're in our college.
Way back then.
Yeah, well, we have speech and hearing science, and what used to be leisure studies is now recreation, sport, and tourism, kinesiology, and community health, and then we also oversee the services for students with disabilities.
Would you like to repeat that? People laugh when I tell them my degree was in leisure studies. They don't believe that actually existed.
Hey, with under that recreation, sport, and tourism umbrella, there are a lot of CEOs of park districts who have graduated, and also sports management is a very popular major within RST these days.
All this time, we just thought that leisure studies was just a lifestyle choice for Boz.
Yeah. Well, hey, I want to let you know the Boston Marathon is coming up this year on April 19th, and we have five Illini.
I was going to ask you, is there anyone on campus that is following your lead in our world-class athletes?
We've got five Illini who are going to be competing in the wheelchair division of the Boston Marathon. One young lady, her name is Amanda McGrory, and she finished second in 2007. And then the head coach, Adam Blakeney, he's going to be competing. His assistant, Tony Niguez, who lived out in Aurora for many, many years, he's going to be competing. And then two student athletes, Aaron Pike and Ryan Chalmers, also will be going out to Boston.
If you could speak to Americans with who are in chairs right now, or who really are as you say, adapted athletes,
Well, they're wheelchair athletes or athletes with disabilities.
With disabilities. What message would you like to send to kids out there who aren't currently participating in sports but are athletes, potential athletes with disabilities or kids in chairs? What would you like to tell them about the multitude of possibilities that exist for them?
When I sign autographs, I sign dream big and work hard, because I think it's important for anybody, whether or not you have a disability, everybody needs to have to dream big and to see their name in marquee lights. I use that as an analogy. And then to work hard, to invest the time and to work hard. And you know, disability is a characteristic like hair color or eye color. It's not a defining principle. And there are a lot of things that I have done in my life that non-disabled people have not done. So the disability does not enter into it. Find a sport that you love, if it's sports, physical activity. There is research after study that shows physical activity is the key to staying healthy. And so whether or not you're walking, whether or not you can see, whether or not you can hear, everybody needs to be physically active. And find that something that you enjoy and get out there and do it.
Fantastic. Really fantastic stuff. I have so much respect and admiration for how you conduct yourself and the life you've chosen to live. And you're an example to people in and out of chairs, Gene.
Hey, I appreciate that.
Mr. G, Gene also is, as you could tell, a motivational speaker, an author, a corporate sponsor. Gene, why don't you give everyone your website? It's a terrific site and allows people to learn more about you and how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, my website is genedriscoll.com, GeanDriscoll, www.genedriscoll.com.
Okay, and on that, you know, you'll see 41 interesting facts. Here's a couple others. Enjoys playing the guitar and writing music and sang the national anthem at the 1992 Milwaukee Brewers home opener. That must have been fun.
Oh, it was great. And Paul Molitor winked at me and said, great job.
Oh, okay. Now, with the guitar and writing music, do you watch American Idol?
I watch American Idol, but I wouldn't go on that program.
No. Do you have a favorite for this season that's still left? There's all of a sudden, a lot of the kids start playing guitars.
No, I don't really have a favorite. And actually, I haven't been following it as close this season. I might tune in and watch a couple people sing and then go to something else.
Yeah, Boz doesn't watch movies. I don't watch reality TV.
I watch American Idol with my wife. We enjoy it.
I'm glad that you do, Boz.
Well, that's the only reality TV it's entertaining. It's real. It's good stuff. Anyway, speaking of good stuff, Gene, thanks for taking the time to come on and talk Illini with this. And next time I'm on campus, I'll give you a call. Come over and say hi. And
great.
Keep up the great work for the university and for the disabled people around the country, encouraging them and motivating them like you do.
All right. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, Gene.
Yeah,
go Illini. Thanks, Gene.
That was Gene Driscoll talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. We're going to take one more break here and wrap it up for the year.
You find the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle, compare up to 5 vehicles at once, access new vehicle reviews, take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you find the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
Get one-on-one information from some of the best-trained professionals in the financial services business. Stephen King is with AXA Advisors, part of the global company helping 50 million people reach their financial goals. AXA, financial protection. For more information, call Stephen King, financial consultant, 224-554-8053. That's 224-554-8053. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The award-winning Sun Tracker Swivel Beach Chair is the only folding beach chair that swivels a complete 360 degrees. So whether you're basking in the sun or just watching the kids, you'll never need to get up to adjust to the optimal position. It's lightweight and folds to only 6 inches wide, so it's perfect for the beach, tailgate parties, sporting events, and more. Anywhere you take a folding chair, you'll want to take the Sun Tracker. To learn more or to order yours today, visit suntracker.com. Or call 888-786-8725. Sun Tracker, the ultimate swivel beach chair. A proud sponsor of Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G. Check it out at suntracker.com.
Step back in time when going out for dinner meant something really special. Step into Wildfire, a steak and chop house with the aura of a 1940s dinner club. Private and semi-private rooms offer a variety of options for any social or business event. Order from our supper club menu served family style. Try our horseradish crusted filet mignon or Wildfire's delicious cedar plank salmon. Dine at any of our 8 Wildfire restaurant locations. Visit us on the web at wildfirerestaurant.com to find the location nearest you.
Streaming 24/7, on-demand archives, podcasts, and more. TalkZone.com. TalkZone.com. Saying a lot for planet Earth. And now, let's get back in the game for more Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Here are your hosts, Boz and Mr. G.
Back in the game, Boz and Mr. G talking Illini. Looks like we got an email from Dick Enberg. Oh, my.
So, Boz, I want you to think about this question.
You're not
going to
read the email?
No, I'm not going to read it. Here's the question. I want you to think about it. It's the last half hour of the season. I want you to think about this question. Why does Talking Illini matter to Boz?
I'm thinking. You want me to answer, or you just want me to think? Well, you know, when we first started the show or first got the idea or concept, it was with the idea of, you know, kind of spawned from the chat rooms. You turned me on to the chat rooms. Thank you very much. And I just, like, enjoyed reading them, and I didn't really take the time or want to get involved. It became time consuming to write back and write back and forth and all that kind of thing. So I thought that, you know, maybe a medium like this would have a marketplace. And so it matters to the sense that over the course of these 2 years, we've developed a little following. We don't know exactly how much or how many, but nevertheless, it matters, because after a show, we'll get some emails from some people, or during a show, we'll get some emails or some phone calls out of the blue. And so that it means that people are interested and enjoy what we do. And that's, you know, kind of makes you feel good a little, that you're providing a service or program, you know, hopefully a combination of entertaining and empowering knowledge out there. But and it provides personally a little 2-hour respite from the dog eat dog world. You're like blown away with that answer. You didn't expect that, huh? And how about you,
Dave? What was the over under on the time?
It went 2:30.
2:30. So I won the bet.
What did you have?
Dave thought you'd be over 4 minutes without you noticing that I hadn't been talking. I said it would be closer to 2 minutes.
No, I noticed he wasn't talking, but.
You know, I think it's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And are we serving the greater good? Do people who live in communities that don't necessarily have online or radio stations that talk about Illinois sports, are we providing a service to them that they can't get elsewhere? Are there kids overseas serving in the military even, who may want their fix of Illinois sports?
Well, you know, absolutely. I mean, again, you know, when we started, there were a few things online. I think, you know, for example, HQ and FightingIllini.com have expanded what they do. I'm not saying it's because of us, but, you know, when we first started, we kind of had the intent to be a little more well-rounded, possibly, with interviews like we did with Gene and earlier in the year, Angela Biseri and Catherine Reuter last week, other things other than football and basketball. But the feedback we've gotten verbally and in writing is, you know, from people out of state that, you know, we're a different voice. We're different than, you know, Lauren Tate and Asmussen.
Are we reaching enough people where it makes a difference? There are a lot of resources going into this. We spend a lot of time, energy, money. Dave across the glass puts in a lot of time making us look presentable, sound presentable. Not an easy task, by the way.
No, God knows.
And you know, I question whether or not that energy, those resources, are being put to their best use. See, you're passionate about Illinois sports. You're passionate in a way.
One of the nicest things he said to me.
No, you're passionate in ways that I'm not passionate. You love Illinois sports unconditionally. Whereas for me, I identify with Illinois sports, but I'm passionate about winning. And for me, it's different. I love competition. I love success. I think you've made that clear. I don't necessarily have this passion, this unconditional passion for Illinois sports that you do.
And well, I'm a Cub fan.
What's the source of your passion? Why do you think that no matter win or lose, you get the same level of spiritual nourishment from Illinois sports or the Cubs as someone else gets from winning?
Well, I don't know if it might be as from someone else gets from winning, but also as from someone else gets from watching a movie or reading a book or going to a concert. I mean, I have developed since I was a kid this passion for sports. And also, frankly, my educational background, and by being in the leisure study curricula, they really...
You had a lot of time on your hands.
Well, no. I mean, it drills into you the importance of leisure has on one's lifestyle and balance and to stay healthy physically and mentally and have some diversion.
Okay, so when Illinois loses a big game or a game that you expect them to win and you've been tense throughout the game and you've really been into it and all of a sudden it all comes crashing down and you can't sleep that night and it bugs you, is that nourishing to you? Do you feel like that gives you enough satisfaction where it actually has a positive impact on your health?
Well, that isn't the way it goes. That doesn't happen to me anymore. Like for example, last week, okay, the Dayton game they lost. You know, I was bummed for maybe 30, 60 minutes afterwards or not even. I flicked on another game or another show that I had taped or watched,
So the winning and the losing doesn't really affect you. How about after we lost the national championship game to North Carolina?
You know, I had invested time and money and
energy,
passion,
yeah.
For it. And I'll never forget that. We went back to the hotel where I think the team was staying there, but most of the athletic department and the alumni and we just sat around at tables. They had some food and we could buy some drinks and we talked about the season and, you know, what had just happened. But the long and short of it was still a tremendous experience, a tremendous season.
Did you feel a sense of anguish though?
Anguish, I define that for me.
I mean, were you torn up by it? Did it linger for you?
No. It's great to win. You can't win all the time. For me, the thrill of the ride, the thrill of getting there, the thrill of the experience, and the thrill of being with you and our other friends that were there. You know, I was with Boomer and Rosie most of that weekend. We went together and sat together and procured the tickets together. And those are once in a lifetime moments. In fact, I had lunch with our friend Rosie the first day of the tournament a couple Thursdays ago. And we timed it so we would be somewhere where we'd be watching the second half of the first round of games where Notre Dame lost and Villanova went to overtime and Florida went to double overtime. Great games, great action. And he brought up, you know, I'll never forget St. Louis. How much fun was that? You know?
Do you ever get more satisfaction? And I'm not talking about Illinois, because Illinois probably gives you more satisfaction when they win than any other team losing. But do you find yourself getting satisfaction, a great deal of satisfaction, from teams that you have a particular disdain for losing?
No, not when the game is over. I mean, I might root for them to lose like I root for them to win and have that same feeling for a few minutes afterwards, and then it's done and over with and I move on.
I'm so competitive sometimes that I think that I get as much out of my rivals losing as sometimes I get out of us winning. Like, for instance, when Kansas lost to Northern Iowa, and their fan base is arrogant, absolutely arrogant. I went on their whatever scout board just to read the meltdown on the scout board, because I thought that they had tormented us all year long. They had basically lambasted Bruce Weber, made a joke of our program, and frankly, some of it was deserved. And now they were getting their comeuppance. And this was the whole karma issue, that they had so beaten down on us during the year, and there were threads. Every time we lost a game, there were multiple threads on the Kansas board, and now this was payback. This was karma, and the proving that the universe has some balance to it, because these arrogant fan, this arrogant fan base went down and got theirs from a Northern Iowa, a place that they didn't even know where Northern Iowa was.
Well, you know, I don't take it that far. I don't take it that personal. I mean, I was happy when Kansas lost. I find
so
myself
you were happy when Kansas
well,
lost.
Well, I find myself in these games always rooting for the underdog. It just makes for
okay. So did you root for, you know, when somebody was playing Michigan State and they were an underdog? Did you root for Michigan State or did you root for the underdog?
No, I root for Michigan State.
Okay, so you don't always
all
root
right
for the underdog.
I take that back.
You probably root for Big Ten teams when they're playing outside the conference. Even
yeah
secretly Indiana and Iowa.
No, absolutely not. I went on ESPN Chicago last week. They were talking about that, and I had to correct them. I said Illinois basketball people do not root the number one nemesis they do not root for under any circumstances is Iowa and Indiana.
So when
the guy
when
said,
Indiana
how
won
about Michigan? I said, well, Michigan, I really don't have any.
Yeah, in 87, when Indiana beat Syracuse, you were rooting for Syracuse in that game?
I just like rooting for good, close games at the end. And I don't know that I was rooting for anyone in particular. My real hate for Indiana comes just recently from the Gordon thing. The Iowa thing goes back to the Pearl thing.
And so you haven't let go of the Pearl thing?
See, no, because, you know, what you said is all fine and good, but you don't understand. Well, you do understand, but things like that affect the program for several years. It took us a long time to dig out of it, and I think
but it was
we're
Digger
still...
it was Digger Phelps and Bobby Knight
still
that did us in. It wasn't Bruce Pearl who did us in.
We're still feeling the effect of the Gordon thing now, and hopefully next year will be the first year we won't.
It was Digger and Bobby who
well,
really did us in.
Well, I don't have any love for them.
Okay, but I'm saying that Bruce Pearl, there was nothing proven in the Bruce Pearl incident.
But see, when something like that happens, the AD, where do these ADs disappear to? They hide under the desk. The AD, like the Indiana thing, the AD should have come out, or as soon as Sampson was hired, you know, they should have had a talk, and or as soon as stuff started, and the AD should have said, you know something? The kid is verbally committed to another school. Forget about him.
But now you sound like somebody who is living in a fantasy world.
Well, I maybe I am. I believe in, you know, ideal being nice,
okay, but,
not cheating, whatever.
You know, you look at every one of these teams that are not mid-majors who have a high level of success, and it's clear to me that they're all dealing with the AAU guys. They all have some form of culpability relative to bending the rule.
They have to deal with them because they're part of the process.
But they can deal with them
within the rules.
Any of these guys who are dealing with these AAU guys are doing something. Even the Mike Krzyzewskis of the world, when they get jobs for somebody at Smith Kline Beecham, you know, and all of a sudden somebody moves, a parent of a kid moves from Alaska to Durham, North Carolina, and starts working for a drug company in Durham, North Carolina.
Well, absolutely.
You know something is amiss.
Well, I agree with that.
So it's happening even in those programs that people consider to be above the law and above reproach.
All right, so getting back to, I think, one of your first questions is, I enjoy watching the games as part of my leisure, as entertainment, just like going to a concert or watching a movie or watching a TV show. And if my team's not involved, I, you know, like I'll watch the NIT tomorrow and root for Dayton because I know the local kid. I'll watch a game where I don't know any kids, and I'll root for a good, solid, fun game. With good play, with good, you know, fundamental play. I like to see good basketball plays. I like to see pick and rolls where centers actually roll to the basket and get a lob pass.
Interestingly,
or a bounce
I have three sons. My middle son is a sophomore at Illinois, was completely emotionally invested in the 2004-2005 national championship run. He was, you know, a diehard orange and blue, lifelong fan, bled orange and blue. And now he's a sophomore at Illinois, barely even goes to the games. And I think there are two reasons. One, he was so emotionally invested in those teams that they broke his heart. They really and truly broke him. I have this vivid memory of being with my best friend and my two middle children, my two boys, who at the time were probably 15 and 13, and after the national championship game, tears were streaming.
I recall.
Down both of their cheeks. And I remember how hard it was for them and how difficult it was for them to have invested so much in that and for that investment to go unrewarded. And the other thing that in Billy's case in particular, Billy's a basketball purist. You know, he was the captain at North Shore Country Day his junior and senior year. He was Jeremy's first high school captain, whatever. But he loves good basketball. He loves fundamentally sound basketball, and it drives him crazy that we are so fundamentally unsound. He'd rather not watch the games.
Well, you know, I don't know how to respond to that. Regardless, I've been rooting for the Cubs since, I knew what it was all about. And when I was 4 or 5 years old, and certainly, you know, they, you know, haven't blown anyone away over the years, but I still root for them. You know, somehow along the way, you get a team and you stick with it. The players in the uniforms change, but the name on the jersey doesn't. They're your team. You're loyal. You stick with them.
So do you think that the listeners get more out of what we do or that you do? Who gets more out of it, do you or the listeners?
I don't know. You know.
Well, like I want you to intellectually focus on that for a moment. Who do you think
gets... When was the last time I intellectually focused on anything?
Well, I was going to say, when was the last time I used intellectual and Boz in the same sentence?
I like to think it's a very fair two-way street. You know, there's times, like anything else, there's times when we leave here and we feel real, real good that it was a really good show. There's other times where we say, not so good. And you know, there's times where we get more feedback than others, but, you know, all in all, I think it's for those who have wanted us to be part of their lives or Illini experience, we serve a purpose. And, you know, whether it's, you know, 1 or 10 or 20 or a couple thousand or whatever it is.
So given the resources that we've both invested, both emotional and capital resources, in this, what if we were only reaching, truly reaching, and people were accepting us on a level where it made a difference in their lives? What if that number was less than 100 people?
What about it?
Would that get you to rethink whether or not the amount of energy and passion you're investing in this was worthwhile? And I don't know the answer to that question. I'm hypothesizing.
Only from maybe a monetary standpoint. But if money was...
From a psychic standpoint and spiritual standpoint, it wouldn't make a difference.
Right. If money was no factor...
So if you were reaching 10 people, it would be okay.
Yeah. I mean, we know someone that... Yeah,
maybe you should become a social worker instead.
Well, I
you know, one-on-one, you get paid for it. And,
I do that at times during my days or weeks or months or life, and I don't get paid for it. I'm just, you know, anyone wants to ask me a question, I'll do my best to help them.
By the way, I think if I ever stop doing what I'm doing in the real estate business and developing shopping center and medical office building. By the way, if you ever need any help in any of those areas, you can call me at Terrico, 847-679-6660. Help defray the cost of this program, 847-679-6660.
Speaking of that, why don't we thank our sponsors, too? Now's
I'm going to let you do that, Boz.
Well, Joe Rizza Auto Dealerships.
RizzaCars.com.
And I assume you go to RizzaCars.com and you could even buy a car online. It'll tell you where the
14 dealerships.
14.
14. If you ever go into a Rizza-owned dealership and you're serious about buying a car, you tell them that you want to speak directly to Mr. Rizza, and you tell them that Mr. G, Scott Gendel, sent you.
Okay.
Joel, take care of you.
All righty. Chicago Athletic Clubs.
Locations in the West Loop, Lakeview, Lincoln Park, Evanston, and coming soon, Wicker Park, Bucktown.
Wildfire, steaks, chops, and seafood.
For that 1940s atmosphere.
It's awesome. In fact, I'm going there Friday for dinner, taking the family. It's come April. Everybody in our family has April birthdays except me. My wife, my daughter, my mom, my dad, my niece.
We're all March birthdays.
Another niece's husband. So a lot of April birthdays, and we're going to celebrate Friday night at Wildfire in Glenview. There are also wildfires in Chicago, Oak Brook, Schaumburg, Lincolnshire, Eden Prairie, Minnesota, Atlanta, and McLean, Virginia. So we'd like to
SunTracker chairs.
SunTracker.com.
Also,
our buddy
Greg Fisher.
And my partner at Axe Advisor, Stephen King, for all your financial
love
services.
Love his novels, by the way.
He's a very, very good writer.
Very talented
and
guy.
And a tremendous...
insurance salesman.
Financial planner.
Excuse me, financial planner.
Yes.
So
thank you
balance,
to all for supporting this program for the last 2 years.
On balance, you get a big psychic energy boost from the program.
I wouldn't say big psychic energy boost. Again, it's 2 hours of fun with you. I don't know who else gets, a firm 2 hours a week with you other than your family. I'm going to miss you,
Well, we'll try to stay in touch.
Should we go to Pittsburgh to meet our friend Bill for the Sox game or Cub game?
You never know.
We have a friend in, I guess he's Eastern Ohio, which is close to Pittsburgh.
Probably like the Youngstown area. Youngstown is just across the border.
Right, because he invited us to Pittsburgh for a Cubs game, and then you, of course, had to say, well, the Sox. You couldn't even look it up yourself. You have to ask him, and then he had to look it up. You didn't even know. You should have known.
Sorry.
That the Sox were going to be in Pittsburgh.
I hope I can work through these issues.
Yeah. So.
But I'm just curious, and I don't want to get too heavy or morose on you, but. I mean, these are critical issues.
The moroses are for tonight.
Time is a gift.
Time
we respect immensely the time that Dave Olson, our producer extraordinaire, puts in. As I said, we could not do this show without Dave. He is a consummate professional. He deserves a much bigger gig than the one we afford him with.
I don't know if he wants one. He looks pretty happy over there.
Perhaps. But
I mean, what's better, working with us or Chet Kopic? Come on. Or Mike North.
From an integrity standpoint, I think we win that one, Boz. Go ahead, Dave. Get on the air for a second with us, Dave.
Yes, boys?
So how do we stack up to other hosts you've worked with? Give us the truthful answer.
By height, Chet's got you both beat.
Yes. I'm fur free, too.
No, I enjoy both of you.
Thank you.
I enjoy both of you.
But who do you enjoy more?
He no just comment.
Said, he just said Mr. G.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
no. No, I think that it's important that we take stock of where we are. You know, it's a time of the year, too, when people are looking
taking
inward.
Stock.
Looking inward, looking at their own personal world. And it's a time in our country's history when people are being more introspective. They're focusing on things beyond the material, things that matter to them in ways that may not have mattered to them 2 years ago. So I think it's important stuff. There's Easter coming up. The Sunday Passover begins tonight for our Jewish brethren, and these are times in the world that demand that we look inward and that we appreciate the gifts that we have around us, the gift of family, the gift of friends, and the gift of the passion that we have for life. So it was a good time for us to examine where we are in the world today.
Well, and we've made a lot of new friends through this endeavor. But it's kind of disappointing that since we started, the teams have been bad.
Maybe we're
like a bad...
We could be a curse, Foz, life. You know?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time anyone accused me of that. But, yeah, we were coming off the Rose Bowl. We thought, boy, oh, boy, we're going to really be established and be in a New Year's Day bowl every year since the Big Ten has three or four of them anyway. And we haven't gotten close.
I was kind of hoping we'd have a new coach by now, but that hasn't been the case.
Well, speaking of that, so are you going to root for us to be bad again so we'll get a new coach? That's a tough one.
It's a hard question because, you know, sometimes you have to fail to succeed.
And what if they make a bowl at 6-6, then they're definitely keeping the head coach.
It would have been, you know what it was.
I think then the following year will be better and better.
It would have been like us making the tournament this year. I'm not sure that how good I would have felt about us making the tournament in a year where we basically underachieved on so many levels. That's not the seal of imprimatur I'm looking for.
But you didn't answer my
question. What I'm looking for is success, true, sustainable excellence. Not mediocrity.
Not one-year wonders.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So answer the question about football. You want to not make a bowl, be under 500, not make a bowl game so that the head coach will go hasta la vista? Will that be a definite?
Well, in a perfect world, I'd like for the head coach to abdicate his throne, relinquish all responsibilities, and become a titular monarch of the Illini football program without any powers or responsibilities, and just surround him with competent people.
I don't know
that,
what you...
That, notwithstanding that, I don't think that's going to happen.
I think it's kind of happening, well, even though I don't understand what you say.
Kind of. But in the scheme of things, what you know probably has to happen is there's got to be a regime change. And when I say regime change, it's not going to happen unless...
Gunther.
The athletic director goes and a new guy gets to implement his system
or
with his
Gale.
People. A new guy or Gale.
So is there anyone out there you have in mind?
I'm so glad we had this time together.
No new
just
name for
to laugh or sing a song or two.
Da, 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 so da, you want to throw a name out there for the next AD?
Yes, I would like to be the next athletic director of the University of Illinois.
I'm sure we could strum up a following and raise some significant
barring that, I would
funds for a campaign.
I would nominate Larry Lubin as the next athletic director at Illinois.
Does he want it?
I think that if nominated, he would accept.
Really?
Yes.
He'd move the Champaign out
I
of
do,
his palatial...
Winnetka State.
Whatever.
I do believe that.
That would be... very interesting. Speaking of Larry Lubin, today his first college roommate's birthday, Kenny Ferdinand.
Kenny Ferdinand, the first two recruits in Lou's history.
53. Kenny's 53 today. Jay Price is 41 tomorrow.
Larry's doing a little better than Kenny these days. Listen, Dave behind the glass, Dave Olson, thank you again for a wonderful year. Boz, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all you do. Your passion for Illinois sports is inspirational. ILL, Boz.
I and I, Mr. G.